Come on in to another episode of Oral Fixation. I'm Andy, and you're about to join Drew and I on a journey through Set My Heart on Fire Immediately by Perfume Genius. This album was released on Matador Records in 2020, and all samples you hear are entirely for the purposes of review and critique. What's interesting when some people are like, I don't know which one's which with you boys. Because I'm like, well, clearly one of us is
hot.
And the other is
hotter.
Thank you.
I do have to shout out a deep anonymous friend of the pod who recently said to me that he thought that having not seen what we looked like, he imagined that I looked like Andrew Rannells' character in Big Mouth and that you looked like Titus from Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
Which is really interesting, isn't it?
Do you know what? But even reading that, I wondered if he got us mixed up. I just feel like I register more Titus than you do.
And it's almost like he can say that either of us are Titus, but we can't say that.
We could never, but...
But I could only hope.
I register Titus, you register Titus.
Thank you, my sweetheart. Really
work nice plunk, you. Was it? You said...
Work plunk. We've got a bit of Jacob... Tonight's episode is sponsored by Jacob's Creek, yeah. Like some of the best Channel 4 dramas.
Friends.
dramas.
Now, look, we're starting things a little differently this week, listeners.
Yeah.
It is listens.
Yeah.
We thought it might be fun to, every now and then, and doesn't have to be every episode.
Sometimes we don't have the time.
Come at me, Immaculate Section, in the past 3 episodes. But we thought it might be nice to just recap Wax Quirical.
Wax Ruby.
Wax Max on...
That's a throwback.
That's a throwback. Fans, that's for the diehards. Mm. On something going on in queer culture right now that we might have some opinions on.
Mmm.
So we thought we'd kick things off with a pretty kind of like, well, maybe it will be controversial, but...
Do you know what? Hold it there. I just want to ask you a very simple question. How are you?
I'm fine? Question mark.
Got it.
How are you?
I'm open brackets spelling question mark close brackets. I'm fine. I'm really, really... grateful to be alive today.
Okay.
There's some really, really great news going on in the world. The UK seems to be doing better and better. In Australia, we've just come out of like this chaotic week of torrential, horrendous biblical rain.
More on that story never.
A beautiful, sunny, gorgeous day. The government in New South Wales, where we're recording from, has announced that from Monday we can dance again for the first time in a year. And the UK, looking like they could be dancing as soon as June.
The next episode will be recorded live from Palms.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
You won't hear us talk, but you will hear All Saints, If You Could Read My Mind.
Summer Rain.
And we'll leave it
there. Et al.
Yeah. So I'm feeling good. You're just fine. But in terms of like queer adjacent subjects, returning to the dance floor is pretty queer.
Returning to the dance floor is pretty queer. What do you think you'll... How do you think you'll feel when you first... Because hold up, though, Toots, we have actually already danced.
It's really weird. It's really hard to explain to people, even actually outside of Sydney, but globally, we had this one evening, Drew and I and our better halves.
I don't like that.
Worse halves.
I like that.
In November last year, when New South Wales in Australia had a really good run for a couple of months, got over the COVID or whatever, and they opened up dance floors for basically one weekend. But It was bizarre, wasn't it? It was Black Mirror, Adjacent Moon and Sun.
They thought it would be longer, but they opened them for one weekend and then there was a flare-up and they had to close it. Yeah. So, but yes, I met Andy and his boyfriend with my boyfriend in the Imperial, which is a very famous pub in Sydney. It's where Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, kicks off from.
Correct. And finishes.
And finishes. Yeah. And the hostess that evening sort of came out to us and said to me and Peter, knowing that Andy and Tom were already inside, what do you want from tonight? And we were like, we want to meet Poppers. Our friends who are downstairs and we want to dance to Gaga. And she said, right, come in, go. There was this covert operation where we had to kind of shift over to another table and then you had to queue for the dance floor. And even then, there were only about 7 people allowed on the dance floor. But just to dance
yes.
again, these guilty
wild.
Feet had some rhythm.
Some rhythm.
But more needed. And then I think the only other kind of experience of that we've had more recently, which was really bizarre to me, was Mardi Gras. So for those of you who don't know, usually, as is with any Pride celebration, it's always a kind of a protest in the streets, right? You take to the streets to kind of infiltrate the patriarchal main stage and kind of put the gay agenda out there, the LGBTQIA+.
Beautifully put, yeah.
Anyway.
Sort of parade your gayness.
Yes.
Yes.
But this year we couldn't do that because there would be no way to, I guess...
Track and trace.
Hashtag. Or police it or kind of, you know, limit it or restrict it in terms of numbers. So they put it in... They hosted the Mardi Gras parade and after celebration in Sydney's SCG, which is the cricket ground there.
Noted queer arena, Sydney cricket ground.
Well, got to say, though, I think it was pretty cool...
It was incredible.
...to take over a quote-unquote traditionally straight male space.
Agreed.
Which was in keeping with the traditions of a Pride or Mardi Gras parade. But just looking out, yes, they kind of socially distanced it, and I'm sure there weren't as many tickets sold as there were spaces in that arena. But looking around, it was kind of overwhelming to see that many people in that space and for it to be allowed.
But with all of that, I felt incredibly safe. And I was...
Yep.
Pleased with myself for almost feeling safe. I was like, oh, no. I was so anxious about this. I had a lot of anxiety and we can't even begin to grasp how many people in the UK might be feeling about going back to spaces like that. But I was pleased with how quickly I became comfortable in a safe space like that. And that gives me hope for the future. And it was amazing not only to feel all of those incredible feelings about coming through COVID and not having done anything like that for over a year, but combined with the euphoria of Mardi Gras was just absolutely special, and I'll never forget that evening. It was wonderful.
I agree. There were moments where I was very emotional. It was kind of like the Venn diagram of the fact that Pride celebrations are emotional anyway, because as we've said, it's about... you know, visibility and like unabashed, full spectrum queer visibility. But then that married with the year that we've had and the fact that Mardi Gras last year really was the final hurrah. The doors closed on clubs pretty much the weekend after, and we're very lucky to have Mardi Gras then. So for that to be the kind of the pointer in time that we then, you know, it signified an entire year that had passed. And for it to look very different, but really sort of at its core still be the same was, a very emotional moment for me. One question I have for you, Andy, before we wrap up this sort of waxing rubical. In Mardi Gras and Pride's future, or let's just say Mardi Gras because it's Sydney, would you rather there be a parade down Oxford Street or it be in a space like the SCG?
My manager asked me that very same thing on the Monday after Mardi Gras. She asked me exactly that, and I said, it has to be a street parade because of where it came from and everything it means for people, and being this beacon of hope that someone can come to from regional Australia and just be overwhelmed by how visible this all is. However... Was I making the most of going to the bathroom whenever I wanted or buy whatever I wanted from the bar? Absolutely. Did I relish that pleasure? Absolutely. Did I read? Absolutely. So there were certainly pros and cons, and I would love to have some kind of combo. There actually is a combo of both, but you go to the parade, but you pay $250 for a VIP seat. That's also a bit random and weird. But yeah, it was mixed. I had an amazing night.
I agree with you. It's nice, as someone that has the bladder the size of a 2-year-old's, it was nice to be able to be whenever I wanted. But for me, at the heart of it, pride is always going to be a protest. It's going to be a reminder to those people that think that there's full equality amongst the sort of gender and sexual identifying people across the spectrum, that there isn't, and there's so many different subcultures and sub identifications that need recognition. And I think for that reason, I would love to see it back on the streets next year.
Yes, coming soon, 2022. And for the rest of the world, Pride everywhere. Manchester Pride, Brighton Pride, New York Pride. Like, bring it all back to you.
Yeah. Take your shiwi.
Take your shiwi.
Or your shipu.
Yes. I've got a question for you.
Yes, they're real.
Will you put a block on your Instagram the next time you drink that much?
Ooh, no.
Oh, good.
I think that people were excited to see that again.
No, people love it.
They've been missing it. And I stand by anything I post because now my boyfriend's mum follows me avidly. And
if anything, you're doing it for her.
I'm doing it for her.
Yeah.
And she actually acknowledged and agreed with some of the more controversial statements I was making on social media that night. Yeah. So, you know.
And that's what we want.
That's what we want.
Yeah.
You know your audience, if anything.
Yeah. So. What a relief to know how she feels. Yeah.
Speaking of our audience and knowing them. PG. Have you got any PG tips for me, Dol?
I stan PG tips.
You're that tea bitch.
And I'm learning to stan Perfume Genius.
Learning.
So, no, welcome to Oral Fixation, everyone.
Perfume Genius.
And which album?
Set My Heart on Fire.
Immediately.
That's queer. The immediately is queer.
That's the most queer part.
Yes.
Yeah. Some might think it was Heart. Some might think it was Set. Others might suggest Fire.
But it's the immediately.
It's immediately.
And I think we'll get into this, but I'm so intrigued. The reason that we had discussed a couple of albums that we wanted to discuss, and we landed on this one, and I think it's because Perfume Genius, I should say that I've been aware of him sort of quite ephemerally, he's been this...
He comes to you in your dreams.
Yeah. some dream, you know, yeah. Some dream. when the moon bends a certain way. But he's always kind of been this, I guess, shorthand for gay angst to me.
Yep.
And the title, Set My Heart on Fire Immediately, seems to be at the epicenter of those feelings of gay angst.
Yeah,
and that's why I... And it's the most recent one. We stand a recent release.
I think this is our most recent album that we've covered apart from Dua Lipa.
Really?
Yeah, like most contemporaneous. For the followers of Cycle 6, you'll know that word very well.
Hot.
When we were talking about which album to cover, there's been a few, and I've been aware of Perfume Genius in the past, ephemerally, has come to me in my some dreams. But this album, I remember it getting enormous buzz last year, which switched me on to this artist in a way that I hadn't been before. I've listened to it for quite some time. It came out in February, so just before the world changed.
Right.
And very recently, he dropped a remix album. Now, more on that later.
Yes.
But this album is by far the body of work of his, which I know the best. I've tried... In the past, I felt like I've been told by people that I should like Perfume Genius, and I've struggled to get there. Don't really know why.
I know why.
Oh.
Because he's not too far away from your boy Rufus still.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, I don't actually. He's changed over time.
Yeah.
But I feel like Perfume Genius and Rufus Wainwright maybe started their careers sounding quite similar.
Interesting. I don't get any of the sense of like grandiose entitlement with a side of bad breath that I get from Rufus. But I kind of know what you mean in terms of like, a bit what? Like, are you talking about his early, early material?
I'm talking about, there's this kind of...
Sorry, but does Rufus not look like he's got bad breath?
Yeah, he's a West gay.
They're the West gays.
They live in West Hollywood. They live in mean Hollywood. Anyway, there's a theatricality to it, which I think that Rufus has. There's a sort of a tension and a torture and a hatred
torture,
of it all.
For sure.
Which isn't, you know, solely contained to Rufus. And I think it's probably more of an overarching queer thing. We'll get onto that later.
Yep.
But there's also just a kind of sonic, maybe in the way his voice sounds. I know that Rufus can skew a bit more kind of like musicality
musical theatre.
Musical theatre, sort of cabaret,
piano
maybe
bar.
A bit sort of more like old school.
Vanguard.
The vanguard gaze, whereas Perfume Genius to me is kind of, he looks for his references, I think, a bit more into the closer past.
Well, like I think they are generationally different. I think Perfume Genius had Peg as a generation younger.
Right. Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I guess what I mean is I feel like Perfume Genius.
Genery.
He's a genery. I feel like Perfume Genius is a direct descendant of Rufus.
Got it.
And that because of that, there's some overlap going on there.
Okay.
And that's why I found it interesting. I had on my notes that I was keen to talk to you about the kind of symbiosis between those two artists, because I think that there is a lot.
Yeah.
And I know that you don't necessarily stan Perfume Genius, but you cannot stand Rufus.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And I'm getting there with the stannery because I love this album. I'm going to come out straight away and just say, I think this album is fantastic. I'm excited to get to know it more. I've actually heard it probably 7 times in full, and there's still so much. I don't know. I feel like this album will reveal itself over time.
I agree.
It's impossible to sit down with this album and be like, yep, like, dislike, whatever, blah, 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 because it's just not that bitch. And we've got future artists coming on this podcast who are also... Like, me and you, beware. There are artists who will come on this podcast, who we will study, where it's impossible for us to get a sense of the album, even in like a week of listening.
I completely agree. And I think that that's what's so interesting about doing this with you is that...
Doing what with me?
This. We're doing it right now. We're podcasting.
We're podcasters.
And I guess that's like, it's the blessing and the curse, right?
Yeah.
Like, I can't know everything about every album that is in some way queer adjacent and have a crystallized thought and response on it for everything. There'll be stuff that I've heard of in the past and kind of have my notions on, and then in revisiting it, have discovered new things. And there'll be someone like Perfume Genius who, apart from knowing probably about 3 of his songs before this, but knowing he's one of those artists that I knew I'd like him, and I know that I like him.
Okay.
I just haven't done the deep dive yet. But right. Anyway, I completely agree with you. Even in listening to this album, from that the first line in the first song is "Half My Whole Life Is Gone," and it just hit me.
Well, you've been there.
Look. Let's get real.
Okay, sorry.
No.
Be serious.
We joke about my age.
Drew is 2 years older than me.
Nearly 400 years older than you. Look, we joke about my age, but the fact of the matter is, I'm 33, and my dad died when he was 63.
Yeah.
So if I directly compare myself with my dad, I am halfway through my life. Now, even if that's not the case, even if I live to 90, I'm just beginning act 2 of 3, which means that a significant chunk of my life is gone. Maybe not half. Maybe he should, you know, a third of my whole life is gone. Whatever.
He could rewrite it for you.
Plus, he's a bit older than me, so whatever. But I think it just, as a gay man, and the idea of age and decay and so much social clout and, I don't know, personal clout being held in your beauty and using that in my... Certainly, if I'm speaking from experience, using my... without being too highfalutin, my beauty or sort of, you know, my body as a bargaining chip, both, well, socially, sexually, in various different situations in my life, to know that that half of that or a good chunk of that is gone just resonated with me in a way that kind of at first seemed really sad. And then going through the album and listening to it a few times, there are moments where a song in the traditional sense will stop, and then there'll be this just like
space,
a minute and a half outro that's just space.
Yeah, yeah.
And it kind of reminds me of, if I'm getting my English
Seamus Heaney,
no, if I'm getting my English degree hat on, it's almost as if, knowing that the first song is about how half his life is gone, it's like, it's how I imagine someone's life might look if when, you know, they say your life flashes before your eyes when you're about to die. It's like it's flashing back to all of these moments of the past, and then there's this space in between, and then it flashes to another memory, and then there's this, like, the way that the songs kind of run into each other, sometimes it's quite jarring how different they sound. There's none of this kind of, like...
Really?
Well, sometimes
I find it quite
there is.
Cohesive.
But then, like, Leave, for example, which is where the eponymous set my heart on fire immediately comes from, that ends really kind of like, it's a very slow kind of like trickling song, and then it goes straight into On the Floor, which is this kind of like
the bop, that's the banger,
that's this sort of honky tonk, almost a bit Haim-esque kind of,
yeah, very that
vibe,
yeah.
And that was like, oh, okay, I'm in this, and it just, I was like, I'm in a new memory now, I'm like, I flashed to a different part of,
oh,
of
this
life.
A really interesting way of looking at it,
and yeah, I feel like I've just gone straight in and at the deep end here with my thoughts in it, but that made me so excited by this album. And yeah, how do you feel about getting older as a gay man?
Well, I interpreted that song a little bit differently to you, I think. I really understand how it made you feel, but I wasn't, I guess I just don't put myself in every situation. I was...
You're also, you know, if the song was a tenth of my whole life is gone, you'd be able to connect with that.
I know. I've been doing some reading of Perfume Genius in the last couple of days, and he's lived a life which is very relatable to many, many queer people. I can't say entirely relatable to me, but I know the existence that he's had. He was horrendously bullied at school to the point where he was given death threats by bullies at school, and the school administration basically refused to do anything about it. That forced him to come out to his parents, who luckily were very welcoming and accepting of him, but they had their own addiction issues. He went off to uni, I believe, or maybe Brooklyn when he was 21, and developed addiction issues himself through... pursuing a life which he thought would be glamorous, you know, the life of the struggling artist or, you know, all of that, which he quickly realized was not the path he wanted to go down. And it was when he went through a stint of rehab that he returned to his mum, who was also well out of her own addiction issues herself. And that's when he got into music. So he came to music relatively later. When I listened to A Whole Life through the lens of knowing what I knew about him, I thought more about the complex issues that a lot of gay men, and I don't know the gay female experience, I'd be interested to hear about that, but the Peter Pan syndrome, where gay men experience many more challenges related to age or perceived age through having almost an arrested development all lost like a chunk of their teens by finding yourself later on in life. Like we always talk about how, you know, just throwing a random number out there, maybe we were in our 20s where our heterosexual counterparts were in their teens, and for all the pros and cons which come with that. In terms of finding yourself, being comfortable in your own skin, knowing who you are. Some people are still on that journey well into their 30s, 40s, looking at you as 80s. Mm. But cutting straight to the chorus of this anecdote, I listened to Whole Life imagining Perfume Genius being like, wow, it's taken me over half my life to even be happy with who I am.
Right.
And that's not great in some ways, but that's also beautiful in other ways.
Yeah.
And does any of that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. And I think that it's something that it's almost as if when you come out, when you reckon with your sexuality, that is when adolescence begins.
Oh, adolescence, sorry. Yeah.
You know, it's your adolescence is you acknowledging yourself as a sexual being and kind of navigating what that looks like. And when you're straight, it's easier to do because everywhere around you is all of the, you know, the paraphernalia that supports and celebrates it.
And what we're saying is not to say that heterosexual people don't experience issues with finding their own identity, figuring out who
they are.
That is the human experience.
But as a queer person, that can only really happen once you come out. And I'm not saying like come out to your family or friends, but once you acknowledge that in your own mind, and then there's just this ongoing, as you say, journey of like
being happy with yourself.
And that to me just feels like this extended puberty.
There's people I know. So I'm 30 now. I came out at 17. There's people I know who are my age who came out younger than me, but I believe still have quite significant issues with their perception of self and pride in who they are.
Yeah.
I actually think that I know some people who don't like who they are, but they came out alone. So it's not actually even just about the time when you come out, you just said. It's about just becoming comfortable or happy with yourself. And the sense I get from opening track of this album is that it's taken him over half his life to get there.
Right.
That was just my reading of it. But I actually really understand that, agree with everything that you said, which is...
But then I guess then it's like part of life is like, for me, is I don't know if I'll ever truly, fully... Like, get. I do love myself. And I think that you'd agree with me that I'm pretty self-aware. But I feel like life is all about discovering new things about yourself too. And kind of like, and constantly kind of journeying further, closer to the sort of the true essence, I guess, of who you are.
Well, I also think that if you just pay any heed to any of the wisdom or advice that people older than us give, is that I guess the rule generally is the older you get, the more happier you become with yourself anyway, or certainly the less you care what other people think.
Yeah, because you're just over it.
Yeah.
Track
two. Describe.
Okay, let me describe this track to you. I've got I think that this album, the songs in this album, there are many that kind of marry up with each other. And Describe and Some Dream to me are kind of soul sisters. And I don't know if I've penned this phrase myself, but in the sort of, I'm calling it teens grunge, like early, like 2013 to like 2017, there were certain acts like, do you know Mitski?
No.
And like Torres and Chelsea Wolfe.
I've missed this entire subgenre.
I'll send you some stuff. It was actually, well, we'll blank it out, but it was
pretty
that introduced me to a lot of this music. And it's very kind of like kind of grunge, but it's informed by grunge in the 90s, but a bit more kind of like guess, of its own time, and describe with the kind of like affected vocal treatment, and then some dream with the guitar that is like just really kind of reminded me of a lot of those artists that I was listening to in like that space of like of 5 years, I guess.
I got Bowie. I got 70s.
Interesting. Yeah, right.
I also did get 90s. I got Garbage. I got Elements of Hole. But definitely Shirley Manson.
Yes.
And I also figure quite deeply, Perfume Genius has demonstrated in this album's way before this one, but you can kind of see his like holy queer trinity is like your Liz Phair, your Alanis Morissette, your PJ Harvey. But kind of coming up through that 90s grunge, but with those incredible female icons who are so important in that genre, but queer people look to a lot, I definitely think have influenced his work here. And that song is kind of it.
Speaking of influences, Your Body Changes Everything. What am I going to say that sounds like, doll? What could that beginning bit that's playing in the background right now... could be on an album that we've discussed on Oral Fixation in the not too distant past. That's a Kate Bush song to me.
Oh, okay.
It is. It sounds like the beginning of the... What's the name of that suite?
A Sky of Honey.
No.
The Ninth it's Wave.
The Ninth Wave.
Got it.
There's... just tearing the place apart. It's also, it's reminiscent of the beginning of Running Up That Hill, but it's just very, it just, I felt like my, I thought my phone had skipped to a Kate Bush album.
Gorge!
It was so Kate Bushery.
Love that.
And I had no choice but to stan. And that's why I think that this album is so, like, interesting to me, because there's that dreamlike kind of Kate Bush... ethereal, otherworldly thing. And that's why, I don't know why I'm like imprinting this fucking theory like I always do, but that's why I just felt like I was kind of going through, like in this other astral plane, and it's just like flashing through into like images of like stuff that's happened to him throughout his life.
Yeah,
listeners,
right.
Do you agree with me? Please send an email.
Without you, yes? I've got Arcade Fire.
Okay.
I'm picking... We're both just identifying lots of references here.
I've got another... What's the other reference I thought was just bang on the money? Cocteau Twins.
Stan. Complete stannery.
Completely. I think it was maybe Just a Touch or One More Try that really reminded me of Cocteau Twins.
Cocteau Twins for me are with Sade... a band who I adore, but I don't think are queer enough to shoehorn into Oral Fixation.
We'll find a way. If queer people love them, then...
Do you know a band called The Magnetic Fields?
The Magnetic Fields, right? Mm. They had a song called... an album called, like, 69 Love Songs.
Which were 69 Love Songs.
And there's a song on that called 100,000 Fireflies. Mm. I don't know if you know that. But it was my second boyfriend, Tom, introduced me to that.
Beep!
No, he can keep that in. He doesn't listen. But he is a psychiatric GP working in London, UK right
Cherry
now.
Cherry Valentine.
Him and Cherry Valentine are on the front Valen line right now. And we send our love. But that's so crazy that you mention Magnetic Fields to me.
Well,
because
I think it's interesting that you said Rufus. But to me... the most similar equivalent is the Magnetic Fields, and specifically the lead singer, Stephen Merritt.
Yeah.
In terms of voice, musicality, again, a different generation. But they sound like the art school New York queers that they are.
Yeah, there was another guy around the same time as the Magnetic Fields released that album called Shoo Shoo. Do you know? It's like X...
I know Fru Fru.
X-I-U-X-I-U. And he had a song called I Love the Valley O. And it's just very, like, it's just very this. Isn't it so... I don't think we've ever had a conversation this in-depth about the amount of references that we got through it.
Yeah.
Through an album. But the thing that's exciting to me is that it didn't It certainly isn't samey, and maybe that's why there's so many references that we can mention. But also it felt very, even though it was referential, it still felt quintessentially of the artist rather than a kind of like stealing or copying off, you know, someone else's homework.
Certainly. Any other songs that you love? On the Floor is the banger.
Let's do On the Floor, because that to me is the one that I didn't realize. Mika found Shook. Any mashup makers listening, I'd love to hear a mashup of On the Floor by Perfume Genius and Como la Flor by Selena. I'll leave that with you guys to do.
Niche.
On the Floor to me, as you said before, that's the single. That's the banger. That was the one that I'd heard on my office stereo and not realised it was Perfume Genius. And then I listened to this and I was like, oh.
Because it's not Perfume Genius in the sense that I know. And this brings me back to what I said at the start, in that for years I've been told that I should like Perfume Genius, and I've gone. I don't remember the name off the top of my head, but the album which came up before this one, that was also hugely critically acclaimed. Do you know that one?
Yeah, the one with Slip Away.
Yep. But I just wasn't finding it myself. I just wasn't listening and going, oh my gosh, I get it.
When you listened to
anything before this album.
Right.
Wasn't getting it.
Nothing.
Now, last year when I heard On the Floor, that was obviously my gateway because it's very poppy, very accessible.
It's like we said before, it's Haim, but it's also, it could be like a more low-tempo Scissor Sisters song. Mm. It's that kind of like, you're on the floor, but you're kind of like,
And I've not heard that from Perfume Genius before.
I'll agree with you. And I think that Without You and On the Floor are kind of, like I mentioned before, are kind of sisters in that Without You also had that kind of like more up-tempo, jazzy vibe. Mm. Not jazz, but you know.
What are some of the other faves?
My favorite on the album is, if we're talking about this appealing to the emo, screamo, little gay boy in me, I haven't stopped listening to Leave. You're right.
You told me to leave.
Sorry. Oh my God. I thought you were genuinely angry at me.
Oh my God.
I was like, what the fuck's he done now? I thought it was someone behind me.
What the fuck?
Anyway. It's so simple and like instrumental, and then the kind of just this like spoken word distorted, like from the upside down voice that's like, set my heart on fire immediately. Like, what is it? Like, chain me to the dream forever.
What was that all about? What does that song mean?
It's just like, I don't know if it's like heartbreak or falling in love or it's so torturous and dramatic. And I was just walking around Wollongong Mall the other day because I couldn't find my boyfriend. And I was just listening to it and just like kind of like staring into the middle distance, just pretending I was in some sort of teen flick. Props also to Jason, which spoke to me of kind of like hot gay sex, right? Like he's putting his hands all over him and he's just like...
Yeah, interesting that you take those from those songs, because I also get the sense, from what I know about PG at this time of his life, is that it's finally, again, going back to the themes of the first song, he's actually really happy and content with a relationship now. That could be completely wrong, but I get the sense that he's been so tortured and angsty up to this point that actually now he's very quite satisfied with his life, but... You can be satisfied and still have hot gay sex. That's the idea.
The hot gay sex is best when you're satisfied.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are your bangers?
Apart from what we've already mentioned, my other favourite is One More Try towards the end of the album. Reverb of the guitar I found very beautiful and soothing.
That's that thing we love. Is it that thing we love?
It's
almost country.
Right.
Is it?
I don't know.
No, maybe I've got the word reverb wrong.
Not sure. But if we're going to talk into what I really loved and mindful of staying on track with time, I can't go much further without acknowledging the remix album.
Because
this is not just a remix album. Now, we've had a few episodes of Oral Fixation recently where we've touched on this. We actually devoted the Dua Lipa episode, if not more, to the remix album than the original. But I think that speaks to the strength of the format in that maybe it's just been the last few years. We've had remix albums forever. But there's been several albums in recent times that I can think of where an artist has put out a collection of remixes on an album, which is as enjoyable, I'm not going to say as good, but I'm going to say as enjoyable personally to me as the original, if not more so. I listened to Club Future Nostalgia far more than the original.
Did I?
But this, maybe it just speaks to the type of music that I like, but I will go back to Caps Lock immediately remixes far more than the original, and that is not an insult to the original.
When's the next time you're going to listen to that?
Immediately. I don't know whether, I can only presume with someone as close to his music as Perfume Genius that he collated and curated these incredible remixes. But some of the remixes he's worked with are A.G. Cook, who is the brains behind anything that Charlie XCX does, and of course, recent Rest in Power trans electronic producer legend Sophie. Mm-hmm. But also Jim Eastack, Planning to Rock, who is this incredible non-binary Northern English amazing producer who's done incredible remixes for Robin. Initial Talk, talk about a banger. We all know Initial Talk, gals, and if you don't, get onto it immediately.
The Dua Lipa Initial Talk remix is playing in the background right now.
Holy moly. And anything that he's done, I presume it's a he. I think it's a he. Initial Talk is a really cool story of a YouTube bedroom music remixer just being elevated to the professional medium because what they do is so incredible. They basically got famous by making 80s remixes of contemporary pop bangers, and they do an incredible job, and they have done a similar treatment to On the Floor. So they made a banger times X. There's also a really, really cool song by a producer that I'd never heard of before called Boy Harsha on Your Body Changes Everything.
Thank you.
That is really, really great, as is the Moonbend remix. Look, go away, listen to it. I'm telling you that. Yeah. It's his turn to storm out now. I think this remix album is exquisite, and I can only hope that more credit or appreciation is given to these. I think the days of when a major pop star would have their song serviced to contemporary dance DJs and you just get like a literally a do remix and you'd be like, fine, whatever. These days it just feels different and more effort and time is being put into this. And I'd actually even go as far as saying the remix album feels more eclectic and varied, which makes sense.
It's almost kind of, it's one of those, I wonder if it'll be one of those things where it becomes more and more expected of an artist. Like what an artist has to do nowadays compared to what they had to do in the past. I mean, the obvious one is music videos, but that was so long ago. But even now, kind of like the fact that they have to create often a lyric video that comes before the music video because the music itself comes out first and then you have to do a lyric video. There's like another video that has to go on Spotify because it's like in the vertical format and it's like this on a loop, and sort of more and more artists are doing that. And now it's like, is the remix album going to be another thing that feels like it kind of like
I don't know.
Fleshes it out more?
Like, fair point.
It's happening more and more though.
And I think I know why. I think it's because of COVID. And I think with both Club Future Nostalgia and this, that artists have put a body of work out and people are just desperate to dance. And it's also giving people a way of like breathing creative freedom back into it. There was an incredible album that Kalayla did a few years ago. Shout out to your bestie Miranda, who posted a song of it this morning on her Instagram stories.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, that Kalayla was amazing in that because her album had been out at least a year by that point. And she put her album out to all these producers who she thought were really cool and just collated all these remixes and super varied and eclectic. But I think in the last year, I think it's because people just want to dance.
Well, We'll just have to wait and see. You are so inquisitive, my darling. Okay, so I'm interested to ask you this question. Yeah. Let's try not besmirch the studios. You said before that you'd kind of like, this was the first album that you'd really kind of like fucked with.
Excuse me?
But do you not have other songs? Do you have other songs that Perfume Genius has done in his past? Because I think this is his fifth or his sixth album. Do you have any kind of, you know, hot hitters that you want to mention?
I don't.
Okay. Do you know the song Queen? Possibly before...
I've heard about... Is it about, like, homophobia?
It's used in Wig, the documentary that we've both seen.
I feel that.
It's at the very beginning.
Yeah, right.
And I think it's about, without knowing too much about it, I feel like it's about that sort of gay ownership and sort of knowing that you are that hot, fierce, queer bitch. And there's this line in it that goes, nobody is safe when I sashay. And then it goes, whoa. And it's just very kind of like...
empowerment.
Angry, empowering, unapologetically queer. And that was the first Perfume Genius song I heard. And I was like, this is tea, mama. And that's from the album Too Bright that I mentioned that we might also want to do.
Yes, right. Now, when we were discussing this, Drew suggested that we do Too Bright. And we've kind of just talked about why we landed on this one. But what do you know of Too Bright? Why do you like that album? Because that was about two albums ago, was it?
I think it came out in 2014. And Perfume Genius first was made aware to me by my ex-boyfriend, whose name we always bleep out. And he shared with me that song and another song from his album before that, which is called, like, Put Your Back Into It. Put Your Back Into It, called Hood. And Hood speaks of, like, secret gay love or sort of some sort of, like, you know... The lyrics go, you would never call me baby if you knew the truth. And there's something about, I don't know, there's some sort of secret clandestine thing going on, or he's hiding something from a lover or whatever. And then the other song that was gifted to me, I guess, was Queen. And they just kind of both resonated with me so much because they both spoke to these kind of two opposite ends or two sort of quite disparate parts of the queer experience, whereby one of them was this kind of quite self, if not self-loathing, then kind of secretive, a shrouding of some information about yourself that seemed directly connected to the artist's queerness. And then the second one was just this unapologetic, like, I am, that's what you think, motherfucker,
and
I am going to eat you alive on the dance floor. It's kind of almost very... I mean, the fact that it uses the term sashay, this was, I guess, just as RuPaul's Drag Race was becoming more known in the ether, but that term, whilst it has, you know, the word sashay is kind of very old and steeped in ball culture, it kind of was it very sort of like dragging that into the forefront and being unapologetically queer and almost, as I say, kind of draggy. And they both just kind of really struck a chord with me. And so I knew the song Queen from Too Bright and I knew a couple of other ones.
Drew, sorry, can I just pause you there?
Yeah.
I have something that I want to talk to you about.
Go on.
I'm sorry if this is going to be a bit real and, like, more than happy to, you know, whatever, delete this if you want.
Right.
But there's a person who springs to mind when I think about this album and the themes that we've talked about and the journey that we know that Perfume Genius has been on.
Right.
And... I think of Bleep.
Yeah.
I think of someone who could be that person who's beyond half their life, but is possibly, for the tiny amount that I know about them, still deeply unhappy with who they are. And everyone has lived a different experience. And it's wonderful that many young queer people, life is just getting better and better and better. It's always going to be difficult for many people, if not most, but generally across the board, life is getting better. But there's people who are very, very close to us in age who have got a lot to deal with still. And I think about that person in your life as someone who is not that far from us in age, but for, again, the little that I know about them is deeply unhappy with parts of themselves.
I think you might be really right about that. And I think that that is perhaps why this artist was so revered by him.
Mm. By Beep.
By Beep. And yeah, it's interesting, like, I mean, we can cut this out or whatever, but
I don't think we should if you don't want to.
It's a
thing that it's. Have you ever read the book The Velvet Rage?
I'm reading it right now.
When did you start?
But I've also read Straight Jacket, which is, I guess, heavily informed by the
Straight Jacket is a little bit more recent and is from the UK perspective. Incredible, yeah. Matthew Todd, but The Velvet Rage was revolutionary when it came out in the early 90s. And I haven't read that edition because it was revised in maybe the early teens.
Even, I think maybe like, yeah.
Because so much had happened, it had to be revised.
And he was acknowledging his own status as being HIV positive, the author Alan Downs.
Sure. He's also, in more recent years, acknowledged that he was speaking specifically from the viewpoint of a privileged white gay male man. But that book was and remains groundbreaking in the sense that when I read it, I read that and Straitjacket in the same 3-month period.
Oh, God.
And God knows what kind of journey I was on. I was just trying to figure, because I don't think I've ever felt as a particularly angry person about who I am. But it's real talk.
It is. And it's real talk.
I think it's compulsory reading.
And especially for someone like, just to go back to the conversation we were having a bit before about my ex-boyfriend who probably had quite a lot of self-loathing going on. I always compared myself to him and was like, I'm so not that. Mm. I'm this like sunshine, lollipops and rainbows.
I'm happy
and he's like not, and like it's difficult to kind of like communicate with him because he's just not on the same plane as me. But I read Straitjacket and I was like, fuck, actually, and now reading The Velvet Rage, it's like, of course you will go through moments in your life where you feel less than or feel battered by either bullying or systemic homophobia or like the lack of visibility as,
or what your family might think of you, or
like all of that. And so I can't begrudge anyone else the way they've filtered all of those experiences through, and those experiences have kind of become central to their personality.
And I do just want to say that when I brought that up about Drew's ex, that wasn't me being that kind of defensive best friend of being like, oh, see, he was like that. That was actually just me highlighting a very real thing,
yes,
which I think affects a lot of people.
And there were also moments when we were sort of going back, I guess, to the thing that sparked that within you, talking about that kind of, you know, shrouded, hidden, self-loathing song that my ex-boyfriend gave me versus the really kind of like celebratory moment. There were moments where, I nearly said his name, where he really was like, I'm going to celebrate myself whether I like it or not, and I'm really going to push through it. And it felt
so admirable.
It's really, but it just felt so unnatural to him. Mm. And that was heartbreaking as well. And I think that I'm only now realizing why he must have loved Perfume Genius so much.
Yeah.
And I'd be really interested if he...
Coming soon to the pod, Beep.
Yeah. Special guest Beep.
That would be a turn up.
But I'd be interested to hear what he had to say about this album, which seems to have come to some kind of resolution.
Absolutely. And I just can't help but wonder if one of the reasons why I really struggled with PG before this album is because I didn't want to hear that level of gay angst and anger and sadness in the music that I wanted to consume.
That's
and now hearing this kind of satisfied joy and self-assuredness, I'm like, I'm in. I'm here for this. I can deal with this. But before, I didn't want to listen to that sad shit. And we can unpack that separately. But I wonder if that actually feels like it could be quite truthful. I don't want to hear about sad gay people.
That's
I want to hear about happy gay people.
Whereas I wanna wallow. I like no, but like I enjoy the wallowing if I know that I can also do the other side and I can do the celebratory kind of like I am unapologetically queer, get into it. Mm. I kind of like switching between those two things. Mm. And that's why I think that Perfume Genius is an artist to me that I'm excited to go back into the annals and really kind of delve into.
Annals.
I love annals. Mm. Yeah. I actually don't think we should cut this out.
No.
I can't deny that there are going to be people who know who we're talking about, but it ain't like he's picking up any of my phone calls in the past 2 years. So
now you chose to put that bit in. I think like the main purpose of this podcast is to dissect and analyze and delve into the musical art of these people, but
these Perfume Genii.
We can't not look at it through the lens of the experiences that we've lived. And I'm glad that we ended on something like that, actually.
And I do think it's like, you know, this podcast is so committed to a celebration of like all of the great things about being queer. Mm. But it also has to be mindful of some of the not so great things. Mm. And I think that this conversation has been really... it's centered on that a little bit, but I think it's an important one to have. And I'm actually really glad that you identified that because I had not identified that so much.
Mm. Well, this is it. Now, you can follow us on Instagram. Oral Fixation Podcast.
Cue the music. If you enjoyed listening to this episode, then you can follow us
on Twitter. Oh no, on the podcast sort of.
Yeah, look, there are whispers in the willows that now it's not subscribe anymore. It's follows. So, depending on what time you're listening to us, follow us.
The best thing you can do is leave us a rating on Apple and a review. That helps so much. That is, you hear that on every podcast you listen to, but that really is the best way that we can introduce ourselves to new people.
If you're thinking right now, but I can't be bothered, be bothered.
Yeah.
Be bothered, because do it on the train.
Think about the joy we've given you and think about the misery we've given you.
And if you do a good one, we'll read it out on air.
Yeah.
Yeah. So do that. Follow us on Instagram, Oral Fixation Podcast.
As you know, Oral Fix Pod on Twitter is queer.
You can also check us out on Facebook. It's just Oral Fixation, full stop, on Facebook. If you want to follow me, you can. It's at With All Due Respect. If you want to follow Andy, you can. It's at Andrew Do You Think You Are. And if you want to follow my ex-boyfriend, you can't, because it's not on Instagram.
It's at Beep. If you want to suggest an album that we should cover in the future, I've set up this nifty Google Forms on our website, which you can find at oralfixationpodcast.com. You just go to suggest an episode and you just follow those instructions.
And that goes straight to our inbox. Direct. We'll make a playlist, which is going to be...
Sad.
But joyful, but referential. Yeah. We're going here, there, and bloody everywhere with this playlist.
Yes.
Tits. We can't wait for you to listen next week. We've got lots of exciting things coming down the pipeline. And we wish you a very happy, perfumey rest of your day. Do you know what's iconic about him? Perfume Genius was his, like, screen name. You know, did you ever have like an MSN name or whatever that was like?
It's also named in honor of that.
Ooh, love will never break the shape we take. Ooh.
Thank you so much for joining Andy and myself on a deep dive into Set My Heart on Fire immediately. If you enjoyed this episode, then feel free to take a trip down memory lane on some of our past episodes. You can check out some of the artists that have inspired Perfume Genius. You've got 80s nostalgia with Kate Bush and David Bowie. You've got 90s nostalgia with Hole and Garbage. And you've got future nostalgia with Dua Lipa. Get into it. enjoy it. Immediately.